G'day. We're here to welcome Crispin to Australia. He's here to talk about securing Linux systems, something that I'm sure is near and dear to all our hearts, to have secure systems instead of ones that are open to attack from multiple sources. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Sorry about the weird presentation. This is brought to you by the Brute Force and Ignorance Committee to synchronize laptops with projectors. So an overview of what I'm going to talk about, explain what the heck AppArmor is, get into some more details, talk about how to use it, demo it, and compare it to other options. So the overview, from 100,000 feet, AppArmor creates a firewall around your applications to keep them from doing bad things. Firewalls protect your network from those bad people out there. AppArmor protects systems and applications from bad things. Because it's a security policy that says, well, you're allowed to do this and you're not allowed to do that, it's independent of known attacks or vulnerability signatures, so you don't have to keep it up to date every week like you do with an antivirus solution. You don't need to be a security expert. It has wizardly tools, so you don't need to be an AppArmor expert, and default policies so that you can run it out of the box. That's not the right button. That is. Zooming in a little, it uses a proactive whitelist approach where there's a security policy per application that says these are the files that it gets to read, write, and execute and no others. So what this does is give you an approximation to the least privilege, what Tannenbaum talked about on Tuesday of the principle of least authority, approximately the least privilege required for this application to run. So this is giving you an element of what Andy was asking for. It has an automated workflow for building such a policy. Principle of least authority is a pain in the butt to construct if you have to do it by hand all the time in great detail, which is why it's an approximation to least privilege and why it has automated tools to build it. Zooming in a little, because this is a technical conference, here's the requisite boxes and arrows diagram. The important part here is Linux 2.6. Way back at the 2001 Linux Kernel Summit, the NSA goes to the Kernel Summit and proposes to Linus, let's include SE Linux in the kernel. And Linus says, no. I don't understand it. It's too complicated. I can't maintain it. And about three times a week, somebody from the security community comes to me and says, please include my thing. And they're all different, which clearly means that the security market doesn't have it right yet. So go away and make it a module. Except you couldn't. What was needed was LSM, the Linux Security Modules Interface, which we at Immunix. Really? Well, yes, but it's clipping. I suspect it's the 1400 by 1050 display. Brilliant. It doesn't have XGL running. It's not OpenOffice. It's the video adapter. Yeah, I tried that. That's where it was in the beginning. I tried all those tricks before the talk started. So anyway, LSM. Immunix Inc., which is where AppArmor was born, in conjunction with the SE Linux community and some people from IBM, various other companies and the open source community. We built LSM for Linux, including Rust here. And that provided an API in which things like SE Linux and AppArmor could live, a loadable module so that you can have the security model of your choice in Linux. So AppArmor is putting itself in the business of being in charge, and that means that you have to be right. You have a couple of critical issues. One is complete mediation. If you build a fence halfway around your house, your dog will run away. So you have to mediate all the way around things that matter. This is why security mediation at layers like the library don't work. You must be in the kernel. Being in the kernel is a development problem because then you have to track Linus and ask his permission every time you change something, which is why LSM and a modular interface is important, so that AppArmor development can happen over here and SE Linux development can happen over there and Linus can do his thing over there and we don't have to really sync up all the time. So that was a huge win. Critical issue number two is your security model. This is where we diverge a little from the SE Linux community. How you specify what's right and what's wrong can get really important, because if it's really a pain in the butt in detail, then no one will ever use it. The first level of model is to consider what kind of model it is. There's misuse prevention and anomaly prevention. Misuse prevention is where you have a list of no-nos, bad things, a black list of not-to-dos. And that's what the antivirus product community uses. You can't run this program or this one 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 or this one, and 75,000 signatures later they're not done because there's always another one. Anomaly prevention is where you have a white list of things that you can do and everything else is permitted. This is the fascist regime of security, that we will tell you what you may do. And that's not very comfortable if you tie your shoelaces together like that and don't get it right and your applications break. So you have a frying pan fire situation of which one of these awful solutions did you want. AppArmor tries to get in between them and produces a hybrid, that it is blacklist system-wide in that only the programs you told it to confine are actually confined and everything else is free, and whitelist within an application. If you confine an application, it's really confined. It only gets to do what you said to do. The other hybridization it does is that traditional security models were designed for users, that back in the 80s, we all shared the mainframe and there were 400 users on the computer and the security solution was designed to try and allow the accounting department and the engineering department and the marketing department to sort of collaborate but still keep the nasty marketing people from filtering the early engineering designs and then marketing them. AppArmor was designed for 21st century computers that are either one user, this one, it's my computer, or zero user, the mail server, which has no actual users. It has an admin who logs into it, and has a bunch of mail clients that fetch mail from it, but it's nobody's computer. There are no users. So AppArmor is designed to enforce security on the applications that run on your network servers and the desktop applications that run on your desktop, and is completely oblivious to users. Users are essentially an anachronism for 21st century computers. Zooming in some more, might want to get a screenshot of that. This is an AppArmor profile for NTPD. NTPD is a great example. It is the Network Time Protocol Daemon, and it has two interesting properties. One is that it needs root because it's going to mess with your system time because it keeps it synchronized with that time server over there. And the other is it needs an open network port so it can go ask what time is it. So now you have the exact thing that the system configuration manual tell you not to do, a root privileged daemon with an open network port. You can't take away either of those properties or it stops being NTPD. What you can do is securely confine it. This policy says that NTPD gets to run as root, but it can only have these five capabilities instead of all 32 capabilities that root normally gets. And it can only access these files instead of as root having access to the entire file system. These path names here, these are absolute path names with shell syntax wildcards in them, and these access modes over here are RW and X. So how would you build such a thing? Pardon?
I'm going to do an L.
O?
L.
L, yes, link, unlink, so that you can delete files. This is the workflow of how you would build a policy, a profile. Step zero is what should you profile? The server analyzer, really a machine analyzer, scans your box for open network ports, finds the program listening to the port, finds the AppArmor profile wrapped around the program, if any, and tells you about it. Your comfortable network secure posture is to have every open network port leading to an AppArmor profile, because then your machine is effectively hardened against the network. There is no way into this machine from the network that doesn't involve going through an AppArmor policy. But you're a long, long way from having profiled everything on the machine. So you selected a program to profile, then you start talking to the profiling tool, which says, well, okay, I'll give you a static analysis pass of your program, which is really cheesy. It's just running LDD to find the libraries that it might use. Creates a stub of a policy and puts it into learning mode, where the rules are not really enforced, but violations are logged. And then you go and run your application for as long as you like, and it logs all of the things it does, and that might be 10 minutes or it might be a fortnight, depending on how big the application is and how good your test suite is. And at the end, you have a huge log of events that allegedly characterize the behavior of your program. And you could get a clever geek and go turn that into a profile, or you could use software, which scrubs through the log, turns it into a policy for you by asking you questions like, what should I do with this? And doing dupalims on redundant questions. Stuff to notice about the language. First is that it's an overlay on top of Unix semantics that Access first has to pass all the classic Chmod user group stuff you're used to, and then it asks AppArmor whether it gets access. So AppArmor is strictly restricting the permissions of applications. It never grants permission to something that the application wouldn't have had without AppArmor. So that's a nice property. If AppArmor is in your way and you need it gone, you remove it, and 10 seconds later you're running just the way you were before, but now you're less secure. So you never have a dependency on AppArmor. Another thing to notice is no new jargon. The path names are exactly in shell syntax. Star means what you think it means. Square brackets and squiggly brackets mean what you think they mean. The only thing that's slightly odd is single star matches between the slashes, so it's just like the way the shell behaves. Double star gobbles up slashes as well, so star star means give me the whole directory tree. Star star.html means give me all the HTML files in this directory tree and not the Perl sources, please. Very convenient. So if you know how to use Chmod, Bash, and grep, you're 80% trained on AppArmor now. Similarly, the access modes are RWX with a few modifiers, so you're about 80% trained on that too. Yes, sir?
What is I?
When AppArmor grants permission to execute something, you have the question of what profile should that child be executing under. So we have an inheritance model that there's multiple flavors of execute permission. IX means that the child inherits the parent's profile, so it's essentially running in the same policy. PX means that the child is running in its own profile, and that profile must exist or you don't get to execute. And UX means unconfined execute, and that's your escape hatch so that you can have an SSH daemon that lets the sysadmin log into the machine unconfined, because if you try to manipulate AppArmor while you're confined, it won't let you. Profile building blocks. AppArmor supports pound include, and it means exactly what you think it means. We use that for building what we call abstractions. So there's an abstraction for name service. And what that does is it provides all the rules that you would need to do DNS lookups and UID lookups. And yeah, those are different, but we bundled them together because we found that applications that do one tend to do the other. So the first time it catches you accessing SE group or something, it suggests that you pound include abstractions name service, and then it doesn't pester you about those name service access rules anymore. Oh yeah, and you can create your own pound includable abstractions, and AppArmor will treat them just the way it treats the provided ones. We provide a bunch of stock profiles for applications. Some of them, this is in SUSE Linux, some of them are enabled by default because we're pretty confident of them. Some of them are not, like Apache. I've never met a web admin who has the decency to put the web documents in the same place as anybody else. Conversely, where the web docs are is always /NFS/remote/mount/to/that/network/attached/storage/server over there that used to belong to Bob, but he doesn't work here anymore. So AppArmor has no hope of knowing the path name to your web docs. So we don't enable it by default, but you can just take the fairly complete Apache policy and drop it in, run the learning mode, and it'll pick up where your web docs are. The demo. This is why I didn't switch to somebody else's laptop. I'm going to hack my personal Apache server and then demonstrate building AppArmor profiles for Apache and for a web application while you wait, and then demonstrate the resulting security. Dude. It is PHF, which is a famous ancient buggy application that came with the original NCSA web server. Walking around with a laptop with a vulnerability on it is kind of a pain in the butt because your automatic update service keeps trying to repair it. So I wanted to have a real bug, not a straw man that I built in the lab, and I wanted it to not get fixed every 10 minutes. So I used something arcane. Also being something easy to demo is a good property. So here I'm hosting this website, not that one. This one, Digital Airlines. And we're also hosting this PHF application, which is a cheesy database for looking people up. Unfortunately, it's retarded. If you hand it spurious URLs which have shell commands on the URL line, it will execute them. Called shell injection, which is a variation on the SQL injection that you hear about all the time now, with unfortunate consequences. Don't fly Digital Airlines, the pretzels suck. So I unhack it with the unhack button, which is really just using the vulnerability to publish a fix. We're back to normal. Now let's fix this with AppArmor. That's the path to Apache on SUSE. Genprof is please build me a profile. I discover that OpenOffice has eaten all my memory. And it says, well, go run your program and I'll figure it out. See, do I have something running in the background here? I do. Don't do that. So, please run your program. So, first thing is let's do an Apache restart so AppArmor gets to see what Apache startup looks like. And down here is a tail on var log audit log, which is the events of what Apache does when it starts up. We go visit the website, and we learn some stuff. That's what it takes to serve a page. And we run the web application. And that's what it takes for the web application to run. Do not run the hack attack. Don't smoke in front of your children either. You can figure out why. Was that a question?
Yeah. Are you able to train your own into one system?
The question was, can you constrain it to only one instance? No. What AppArmor did was load a policy into the kernel that said that whenever something named user sbin http://prefork executes, we will profile it with a learning mode policy that will emit learning events. So if you ran two Apaches with that name, then they would all get learned. On the other hand, if you had a different instance of Apache that had a different name, either you had a hard link or a different directory tree or something, then that would not at all be captured by the policy. Let me finish the demo before I get detailed. So that was learning, mostly. We'll do another restart so that AppArmor gets to see a shutdown. And we've learned some stuff. So now we have this log file full of crap. And you could go write policy from that, or you can just use software. Scan the log. No, I don't want to learn about OpenOffice. Okay, Apache Prefort. It saw me exec that PHF thing. This is your IX question. It wants to know whether I should use an I or a P. I would say that PHF is now part of Apache effectively. P would say, I don't trust it. I want it to have its own security policy. That's the more secure answer. Should it clear the library path before it executes? Yes. And does PHF get to do some library things? Yes. And then it switches to Apache, and the first phase of questions is about POSIX capabilities. You can pretty much just say yes to all of them. It's putting square brackets around the default answer, so I'm just leaning on the return key so it does the right thing. It wants into the Apache conf directory. Well, okay, that's pretty obvious. We'll allow that. It wants deep into the Apache conf directory, and this is where humans come in, that I realize that I don't know anything about Apache. So I should wildcard it a tad, and now I'm saying that Apache gets to read SC Apache 2 **, give it everything, give Apache read access to its own directory tree is a highly secure thing to do, it doesn't matter, and I don't have to think about it anymore. There's name service at work. It discovered that SC group is part of the name service abstraction. Some MIME types, some PHP stuff. Oh, we've discovered that it's a pound includable. Here's another fun button. If you hit glob with extension, then it wildcards the mod CGI part and leaves the .so. So this is give me all the .so files. There's some more .so files. Yes, Apache should talk to its logs and its PID file, and we're done. So we don't have to restart Apache because you can change policy out from underneath the running process. We can visit the home page. What? Pardon? I didn't. Oh. So? Thank you for noticing that. And we can visit the home page. Make sure we're really visiting the home page by going somewhere else. I should add that to the demo because it's a good demonstration of how fast you can recover from a policy error. We can run the web application. You can try the hack attack, but it doesn't work. And there's your intrusion rejection message that says, in particular, yeah, right. All right. What it says is that PHF doesn't get to run bash. Now imagine that PHF was a bash script. Well, it would get to run bash, but it wouldn't get to write to index.html. This is the whitelist effect at work that I don't want to know what the attacker did. I don't care. I just want to confine PHF to do what it's supposed to do and nothing else. So that effectively is the demo, except for this is the policy that we just generated. Huge, ain't it? So I suppressed questions. No, I'm not done. People were asking me questions in the middle. All right, no questions? Okay, so carrying on.
I did have a question.
Yeah.
You've got fine-grained control of file access, but note that binding a port seemed only to bring up one can-bind-any-port thing. Is there a per-port constraint?
currently there's the POSIX capability for netbind that says you either do or don't get to bind to low-numbered ports. In a future edition, we're basically going to be adding IP tables rules to AppArmor profiles.
Nice.
It really isn't really question period. I have a bunch more slides to go.
You mentioned there is a hybrid mode. So the entire system uses a blacklist, and then the servers that you run uses the whitelist.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So as a normal user, he has access to various commands. Are these commands, can he execute as and when he wants or access any files that he wants besides the servers that is running on the system?
What user?
TC shell or...
So it depends on what user. Typical workstation, I give myself an unconfined shell. I can do anything. I give myself the root password. I can really do anything. On a network server, you don't give your users shells. Most people on their mail server have a login of false or null or whatever it is. So what user? And if you really, really want to do a multi-user role-based access control thing, then we have to switch to a new demo. Really hard not to type my root password into a prompt. Is that all visible on the screen? Okay. There's my learning. Suppose we have a junior sysadmin. He's the owner's nephew, not very good. Yeah? Is that better? Okay. So, owner's nephew is a junior admin in our data center. He's annoying and stupid, but we have to give him a job. What should we give him? Well, let's give him syslog analyst. It's tedious and boring and read-only, so he can't break anything, right? Except he needs root permission to access the syslog, and the last time we gave him root permission, he deleted the database. Okay. We're going to give him a confined shell. So, and I've already done that. Log bash is a hard link to bash. So now I'm going to confine log bash to only do particular things. Make previous demo go away. So now we have, we're going to create a policy for log bash, and then you would give Bob the sysadmin, the junior admin, a default login shell of log bash and a UID of 0. So whenever Bob logs in, he's got root privilege, but he's confined by our policy to only do what we say. Hi, I'm Bob. I can grep syslog. I can view it. edit my copy and put it back. Let me defer that. I'll get back to it. So let's say that's enough. Now we'll go and build Bob's profile. Scan. Always say inherit when you're building a user profile, because if you let Bob use the system profile for something, then he might get more access than you really intended. Allow bash, console, name service. Input RC. No. Definitely not. No, 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 no. Pound include temp. Okay. That's way too specific. Var log messages. Done. Okay. So now I'm Bob again. And I can still do this. I can go into edit. And I'm going to try and write a system copy. No, can't do that, because you don't have write permission on var log messages. Should I do it? No. What? So, root prompt on my personal workstation, protected only by AppArmor. What command should I execute? Pardon me? Pardon me? Before
dash space time.
Sure. No. Single or double quote? No. That's the inheritance model at work. That we created a policy that said that Bob gets to execute bash. That was sort of implicit to doing less and then VI. But it was inherited mode, so that instance of bash gets to run under Bob's policy, which still doesn't have write permission to very much of the file system. Certainly. The number zero? It was probably one of the standard pound includes that gave him permission for that. Password would be a name service. But cat isn't. Sure. No. That's what I did to build the policy. That's the learning mode. That's what learning mode does. It grants all accesses and issues a log for whatever access was outside the policy. Right. Yep. So, like, whether you learn from the log is not AppArmor's problem. You don't have to learn from it. You can simply log it. And you can log him in perpetuity with this command. That just changed that policy to learning mode. And if I go back into Bob now, that live root prompt is very dangerous. I will not, no longer do things that you prompt me to do. I'm going to switch back to my slides now because I actually have more content. You can't tell from inside other than you get eperms for things. You can tell, let's see. The question was whether you can tell whether you're confined or not. There's a variety of ways to inspect policies and such. The unconfined command is the server scanner, and that just scanned for open ports and found profiles and such. You have to be root and you have to be unconfined to be able to run unconfined. Dash dash paranoid lists all processes, pipe, less. What were you looking for again? And so forth. Oh yeah. I can't remember exactly which kind of failure mode you'll get. There's things. Yeah, need to get going. So, open interface useful. That's a pile of slides that are the demo I just did, so that you don't have to sit through it. Subprocess confinement. Back in the day, if you wanted Perl scripting Apache content, you would exec Perl and then run the script, and that sucked for performance because Perl is a 5 megabyte executable. So they created mod Perl, where now there's a Perl interpreter inside Apache, and for your scripted content, you just open the 100-line Perl script and interpret it in place, and that's great for performance, but now you're running all your web content in the same security domain and the same address space, which is awful for security. So AppArmor has this API, the only API, called ChangeHat, where software has multiple hats, like fireman's hat, and policeman's hat, and mayor's hat, for all you Richard Scarry fans. And there's an Apache module called ModAppArmor that calls this API. So every time you try and access a PHP page or a ModPerl thing, it calls ChangeHat and puts on a specific security hat that says, well, while I run this 100-line Perl script, I'm going to be in a separate security policy that is much more restrictive or perhaps more permissive than the one for Apache. And then as soon as it's done, it takes the hat off and goes back to being Apache again. The bottom line here is that you can have AppArmor-style policies for things as small as an individual PHP page. It requires application change. AppArmor can't do it transparently to a totally closed binary. Can do it to an application server. That's what we did here, that we put mod AppArmor into the Apache stack. Similarly, we put mod PamArmor into the Pam stack. We have another one for Tomcat, and so forth. Anything that manifests applications as discrete thingies that don't show up as processes, you need an AppArmor module to go into the application server. AppArmor is integrated into SUSE YAS, which is great for selling to customers. And there's that command line interface for those of us allergic to mice. Does reporting and alerting. You can program it to send email every time it gets a violation, and you can program it for how often in case it's going to your PDA with a data rate that's unreasonable. Best uses for AppArmor. Bunch of marketing crap, but bottom line, any Linux application that is vulnerable to attack and matters. If it's not Linux, I can't help you, sorry. If it's not vulnerable to attack, then you don't need security. And if it doesn't matter, then I don't care either. Network servers. All your network servers should be profiled with AppArmor because they're all vulnerable to attack, even if it's inside your LAN. If your company has more than 10 people, then there's a potential that one of them is a criminal. If your company has more than 10,000 people, it's a theorem that one of them is a criminal. Business applications, they're complex. Your manager told you you had to run them, and you don't get to change his mind about that. And you don't get to audit it, and you don't get to bug fix it. Oh, well, let's profile it. Corporate desktops. I love Game. It lets me IM with my wife on Yahoo and my corporate peers on Novell GroupWise and my devs and Linux pals on IRC, but that bastard gets a bug a week. It is such buggy code. So I'm very happy that there's a profile around my Game desktop client so that if somebody hacks my client, they don't get my desktop. Point of sale terminals. That network threat that I was discussing before, I'm really tight on time. This is where you treat the keyboard and the mouse as the threat and profile everything that the user can put input on. SE Linux comparison. This is the procedure for building an AppArmor profile, 5 steps long. This is the corresponding Red Hat documentation to build an SE Linux policy that's 16 steps long. And that would be a cheap shot if my steps were big and their steps were little, except my steps are run the program and answer the questions, and these steps are edit the policy file and lather, rinse, repeat. You can judge for yourself. Network storage. SE Linux uses label-based attributes that require that you stick labels and extended attributes on your file system, which is an administrative hassle in itself, but when you hit NFS that doesn't support extended attributes, that means that the SE Linux policy granularity for an NFS mount point is all or nothing. And AppArmor doesn't care what your file system is. You can do this over NFS, AndrewFS, whatever. Here's comparative policy for WooFTP. We're a quarter of the size. And when you zoom in, you've got over here absolute path names with shell syntax wildcards and RWX. And over here you have a lovely M4 programming language that O'Reilly will sell you a book on. The roadmap, we're going to add a lot of security and usability stuff that I'm probably out of time for. Where to get AppArmor, some URLs. I will put this talk on the web. Availability, it's bundled in every SUSE Linux. And here's the stuff I wanted to get to. AppArmor is for everyone. The OpenSUSE build server will let you build packages for all sorts of distros. Go nuts. AppArmor for Debian. AppArmor has been ported to Ubuntu by Magnus Runesen, and there's the download for it. And to Gentoo by Matthew Snellum, and there's his download for it. A Debian port should be doable based on at least Runesen's work. I'm looking for a Debian person who likes AppArmor and would care to maintain a deb for it. Shouldn't be hard. AppArmor for Red Hat. It has been ported to Red Hat multiple times. There's lots of Red Hat people who would like to use AppArmor. But none of them ever wanted to be a public maintainer. So Steve Beattie at SUSE did a Red Hat port for me. AppArmor was originally Steve's master's thesis. So here are some URLs for Steve's work porting AppArmor to Red Hat. It's RHEL 5 or 6, I'm not sure. And again, I'm seeking a Red Hat Fedora type person who would care to pick this work up and maintain it, because we don't really want to be in the business of maintaining Red Hat software. Questions? Russ, I believe, is queued.
You mentioned protecting the desktop. Now, the problem with that, of course, is that unless you've got XML controls, it's always going to be supplemental or imprinted file access by game is easy enough. But X control is a much harder issue to solve.
What do you mean by X control?
In a default X configuration, every X application can read the contents of all windows and read all event queues, including keyboard events.
Ah. Okay.
And insert in events as well, so you can insert new key presses. So if you've got an X term logged in as root, so you can just insert some clients in root shell.
Ooh, not so good.
Yeah. And so you're skipping a password.
Okay, good point. You, sir.
Can you give a comparison, a brief comparison of LIDS and AppArmor? And my second question is, does AppArmor prevent a kernel from dereferencing a local user space address? And also, whether AppArmor prevents a user from doing a mapping of a user space, memory mapping, and dump a shell code so that kernel can dereference?
I'm not sure how many questions that was. Comparison to LIDS, broadly speaking, libs tries to come at it both ways, both from confining an application to listing the files and going over to files to list what applications can access it. The latter is ACLs, and AppArmor is not trying to reproduce the work in ACLs. I also don't think libs has the learning mode. Kernel protection. AppArmor provides zero protection for the kernel. The kernel is just as vulnerable as it ever was. If you want that, go to Minix. Andy Tannenbaum's Minix is the answer to how to protect your kernel. Or the herd, or L4, or your favorite microkernel. And I don't think I heard the third question, and I think it's his turn.
When it comes to AppArmor scanning what it has learned, can you assign sort of groups of commands? So say a user wanted to use more rather than less, but less is the only thing you entered while it was learning. Can you do that?
Sorry, what was...
When it scans what it is learning, so when you're building the profile,
mm-hmm.
and say when you were building it, you only used less, but the user wants to use more, can you build like a group of commands that the user can use?
AppArmor, once the policy is set down, the policy is fixed. It is enforced. You can build a flexible policy by using wildcards. So if in the demo exercise they only used less, you could hit the glob key so that they had access to user bin star. Which would be very interesting. They get to run any command, but it's restricted to the file access of this policy. I wouldn't call that hugely secure. I wouldn't feel real comfortable with serious bad guys using such a policy. But I really wouldn't mind if my friends logged into my machine as root and were restricted to that policy so they had all of user bin, but I pretty much had control over what they could fat finger.
We're going to wrap up the actual recording at this point in time. Questions, feel free to come down and talk. Thank you very much. That sounds like a really groovy talk.
Please come see me if you want to be a Debian or a Red Hat maintainer.
Come on, Russell.
I
don't
mind about the Debian stuff. I want to copy.
Yeah, you must give me a copy of all that will beat you up.
See if it likes it.
The third on the rhythm and page question.
Oh, yes. What I was trying to do there was to